many realms of Azeroth to the great dark beyond via the magic of podcasting. This is episode 16 of The Rolling Restart. Hello, folks. My name is Ro. My guest co-host this week once held the reins of Azeroth. She's a mythic raider and my partner in podcast crime earlier this year for an April Fool's episode of Lagging Balls. You can call her Cinder, because that's what I call her as well, especially when I try recording this podcast episode two times.
Hello, Ro. Hi, everybody.
Long time no talk.
Okay, I know.
Behind the scenes, we tried to record the first 15 minutes of this episode, and everything was going great until about 15 minutes into the episode, I noticed, hey, Ro, you haven't clicked the button that says start recording. So, yeah, that's a thing. So, big advice to anyone who's planning on, you know, podcasting, where you're talking about Warcraft or anything like that. If you're going to do a podcast, make sure you hit the record button. It's very important. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like plugging in your computer, you know, turning the switch, powering it on and stuff like that. It's important.
Oh, okay. I'm going to help you feel better because, you know, I wasn't going to confess this, but, you know, just because I don't want you to feel rubbish either. So during raid on Sunday night, we were in Discord and I was saying things and nobody was responding to me at all. I'm like, oh my God, everyone is so rude.
I know where this is going.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, my microphone's not working. And I restarted Discord and restarted my system. And I've just changed from a Mac over to a PC. So anytime there's a problem, I will take great delight in saying how pants Windows is. So I'm like, stupid Windows update, you wrecked my microphone. Took me a couple of days. It was only in getting this set up to talk to you that I realized I had pushed my mute microphone button on my headset.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong, and Windows isn't as pants for that anyway. So, you know, we all do the silly things.
You know, I would say one third of everything that I say in the raid team never gets heard by anyone in my raid team, because half the time that I'm trying to talk, no one's hearing me because I forget to double check and make sure that the right microphone's working.
Yes.
Having a webcam mic and a podcasting mic and then another mic, it can get a little tricky juggling all of it.
Yeah.
So let's try to redo this and keep it new and fresh and yet say the same stuff we just said about 15 minutes ago. A little bit of housekeeping, first of all. People, some of you who have been listening since episode zero may be wondering, hey, this is around the time that D2D would be on the show, and you would be right. However, D2D and I had a talk a couple weeks before recording this episode, and he isn't really playing World of Warcraft that much anymore, or rather he is, but he's playing on this little thing called a vanilla server. I mean, I don't want to get him in trouble. Fortunately, I'm just calling him D2D. Yeah, I mean, I guess they could go to the forums and look for the Guardian and hunt him down. But I feel like the Guardian and his trusty banhammer would keep even Blizzard at bay. So that being said, D2D will not be part of the regular rotation on the show going forward. He may make a return at some point. He isn't necessarily done for good. But for now, the Guardian of the Forums has retired to the darker, earlier recesses of World of Warcraft history. I wish him the best of luck and much fun in his vanilla travels. Cinder, I would say that you are probably a apt replacement for D2D. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to do some Guardians of the Forum talk here, but I know that if I were to read a forum post or two, you would probably set that thing afire.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 I've been known to get my ranty pants on. Yes.
Indeed. I have heard the rage sometimes. Of course. One of the reasons why I have Cinder on this week is because I wanted to do a legit podcast episode. So for those of you who may not check out the Lagging Balls podcast around April Fools, we did an April Fools episode of Lagging Balls. And with Thorn and Thist were supposedly gone. Thist was off on some sort of affair with Ian Hazzacostas and such. And so I wanted someone who could be a Thist to my Thorn. And I thought that Cinder would be a great fit because of, you know, what she's done on Reigns of Azeroth and everything. And that, Cinder, I'm just glad to have you aboard for this week's episode. I'm really excited.
I'm excited to be here. I'm excited.
All right. So, folks, before we get into the big, big topic, and this is going to be kind of free form, but I guess I wanted to touch on this because it's something that I teased about last episode that, hey, maybe I'll finally break down and talk about 7.3 and just succumb to the spoilers. Well, newsflash, I have still not succumbed to the spoilers. I still don't know who the final boss is, although I'm guessing it's Sargeras. I still don't know how we fight Sargeras. That being said, Cinder, how are you doing with 7.3, and are you avoiding spoilers? Are you just diving deep into the well, as if I haven't heard these answers before because we recorded 10 minutes ago?
Yeah, look, no, I'm trying to avoid 7.3 like the plague as best as I can, and I'm failing. But, you know, it's mostly my own fault. Like I was saying to you before, being part of Reigns of Azeroth was amazing, but one of the great things about not doing that podcast anymore is not having to look at spoilers or what's coming up in new patches to be able to talk about it for our listeners. So, I've really been trying to avoid everything. And we didn't talk about this before, but hey, I'm going to talk about it now.
Sure.
Because one of the reasons is that I'm finding it difficult to keep the hype train going at the right time. I feel like the 7.25 like just came out or Tomb of Sargeras is like, has not been out for very long in my head anyway, is how it's feeling.
Right.
And
well, I mean, it's only been about, I'd say what? We're going on about 7 weeks now. People yes. haven't even killed Kill Jaden on Raidfinder yet. Actually,
exactly.
As people listen to this, when this episode comes out, that'll be the first opportunity that Raidfinders get to take down Kill Jaden.
Yeah. Yeah. And all my poor little alts who haven't done it yet either.
There you go.
Yeah. So it for me, I feel like right now we should still be like super excited about going to kill him and do all of that stuff. But instead, there's a lot of attention being diverted to being hyped about 7.3 and what's happening in 7.3 and where we're going and whatnot. And it's like, but hang on, like we're not actually there yet. That's not actually a finished product yet. It's still, what ifs and maybes and, I'm finding it difficult because it's not marrying up. The hype is not matching up with where it should. And it's making it really difficult.
Yeah. And I think part of that, and this has been brought up before, and I think I've talked with, John about it before previously on an episode here, is that the fact that we have known for, 9 months now, that Argus was going to be a destination in Legion. It has kind of made this whole thing weird. I mean, in any other scenario, if you were to tell me, hey, 7.2, the raid for that, we're going to the Tomb of Sargeras, and you're going to ultimately take down Kill Jaden. If you were to tell me that, I would think, oh, Kill Jaden's the final boss of Legion. But since we know that, well, there is something else beyond it, and by the way, it's Argus. And Kill Jaden almost feels demoted toward being like the bouncer for Argus. It's
yes!
like, in order to get to Argus, you have to get by him.
yes, I agree. And it's a big deal. Kill Jaden's not some little random or secret
He's not
bodyguard.
Small potatoes.
He's not small potatoes.
He's no Mal Ganis.
But just, I in that way, like, and I have to say, like, having, obviously, I've killed him and on heroic and whatnot, and there's little cinematics and all of this stuff, and experiencing all of that was really awesome. And he could have been an end raid, like an end expansion boss. That could have been a legit thing that they did, because it really did feel, yeah, you did something epic here. And it feels weird, and I feel like, as you said, something's kind of been taken away from that by knowing but wait, there's more. And off we're going somewhere else to do other things. And I'm like, well, how do you get any bigger than him within this same context?
Yeah,
you know,
it's just the bar gets set pretty high with Kill Jaden. So how do you top that? Let's go to Argus and fight Sargeras and whatever he has planned for us. I'm hoping that however we take down Sargeras, I'm just hoping it is not let's get on Sargeras's back and kill a bunch of tentacles.
Oh God, memories.
beware. Yeah. DBM yes. Warnings galore. I still solo Dragon Soul from time to time to get a certain mount, by the way.
Warnings. I was so grateful that I managed to get both of the mounts from Madness, so from the last bit, so I didn't have to go through Spine. I just got up to Altraxian, tried to get his mount. Okay, done. Don't have to go any further.
Nice. So, yeah, I guess as far as 7.3 goes, I'm still trying to avoid stuff as much as possible. And one thing that you and I had talked about a bit earlier was that it's not the easiest thing to do when you decide, hey, I'm going to be talking about World of Warcraft, and I'm going to be following a whole bunch of people on social media that are talking about World of Warcraft too.
Yeah,
it's kind of a tricky thing, and it's been one of the hardest things for me to do, because I'll tell you right now, as far as spoilers go, do I know some things about 7.3? Absolutely. I can't help it, because when I'm following literally hundreds of people, there are going to be some people out there who are seeing WoWhead's data mining and be like, oh my gosh, look at these pets and these mounts and so on and so forth. And
yep.
I know, Cinder, you had gotten trapped by that social media leak itself.
Right? I have no willpower. I wanted to look at the pretty pictures of the mounts. I just wanted to see the mounts. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to eat. How bad can it be? I'm just gonna have a quick look, nothing bad, and clicked it and read two words, and I'm like, oh, damn it. So, you know, I did it to myself. I did it to myself, and you know, you did get spoilers that you can choose to get, and that was one like that I chose to go. But as we were saying before, you know, there's all manner of things that can show up in your social media feeds, and you know, it is what it is.
Yep, and I mean, honestly, though, for me, information about pets and mounts and stuff like that, for the most part, isn't a big deal. Like, I don't care if I find out that stuff. That's not spoilery to me. Spoiler stuff is who's the end boss? Who are we fighting in the raid? What's happening to Illyria and Turalyon? I mean, I already know Illyria and Turalyon are on Argus. We've already been teased about that and stuff like that. So I already know that's going to happen. I don't know what's going on with them. I don't know whether they've had more kids or not, for example. Wouldn't it be fun? Illyria and Turalyon have a son, because we see him in Burning Crusade. Wouldn't it be funny if he goes to Argus too, and then he finds out that he has like two or three brothers and sisters and stuff like that?
Awkward. Like, why did you leave me behind? I know the final boss of the raid because I'm stupid.
So you got trapped into finding out the final boss.
That was one of the first ones. I saw that, and that was actually the point where I made the decision to go, you know what? I don't want to know this right now. And so I didn't read anything else. I had a very quick scan, because I think the raid boss list came out pretty early on in the data mining. And stupidly, because I'm just an idiot, scrolled to see, oh, who's the last boss of this? And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, no. Don't want to know. I don't want to know anything. I want to see how much I can be surprised by. Because, like, it's like going to see the Lord of the Rings movies, right? Like, most people had read all of the books and knew everything that was going to happen.
Sure.
And it kind of, I don't know, in some ways takes away a little bit from, I mean, it's still awesome to experience it and see it all right in front of your face. But, you know, when it's stuff that you don't know and it's a story that you haven't, like, that you don't know the ending of, it's so much more, like, you get so much more invested. I don't know. I'm just a dork. I love the story, and I want to be surprised by it. I don't want to find out about it on a post of data mined stuff. It's, yeah.
You have hit the nail on the head. And the key reason why I've been avoiding as much as I can about 7.3 story is because, I mean, if you look at World of Warcraft Chronicle, the first volume, and all the exposition that they gave about Sargeras and Titans and all that stuff, I feel like a lot of what they wrote there was a big setup for what we are about to run into. Mm. Taking on Sargeras and the stronghold of the Burning Legion is kind of a big deal. I feel like there are going to be a lot of lore payoffs in 7.3. And to me, in some ways, now, I mean, I know we're going to have another expansion after Legion, right? But even more so than Wrath of the Lich King, I feel like Legion is this big climactic point in the history of World of Warcraft as a franchise. I mean, there's going to be more stories to tell and more places to go, and another continent will appear out of nowhere on Azeroth, and we'll have to go sail to it and fight some old god we'd never heard of before, or something like that. But my point is, a lot of big stories could come to big conclusions in 7.3. Important people could die in 7.3. Big twists could happen in 7.3. And because of the stakes are so high, that I want to be as ignorant of those stakes as much as possible until I see it play out in game. So much so that when 7.3 goes live, I am going to try to avoid the raid journal as much as I can. And this is the a tricky part for me, because I'm actually kind of one of the DPS leads for my raid team. And usually, you know, you study videos and stuff like that. So it's going to be one of those things where, yeah, a little bit ahead of time, I'm going to actually have to find out, okay, who's the next boss we're taking on and stuff. But I want to be blind to that stuff as long as possible. And at least whatever the final raid is for Legion, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be launching when 7.3 launches. They're probably going to follow the same pattern as previous patches and wait for 7.3.5. So we're going to have time on Argus doing Argus things, and then the raid will come up like 2 or 3 months later. But yeah, this is a big moment in Warcraft, and I am really excited about just experiencing it and watching it happen. And for those of you who don't care about spoilers at all and just care about the loot, hey, you know, good for you. Good on you. You go
for it. There's a lot of it. There's going to be a lot of it. The things that they're just throwing at us, like, I mean, like, I haven't been looking at anything specific, but seeing lots of mounts and stuff and pets and
so many pets. They dropped a whole bunch of pets last week, and just before we recorded this show, apparently they've dropped a whole bunch more. And Jeremy Fiesel was talking about, you know, a big dump of pets and stuff like that, and achievements with really great names. And I'm sure by great names he means really punny, awful names. Like, yes. Achievement names that would make hunts the win from the overly dramatic news crowd.
Yeah, I've seen one of the achievement names. Somebody had cropped it and posted it, and I'm like, that is actually hilarious, and thankfully not too spoilery at all, but it was hilarious. So I am looking forward to stuff like that. I ramble, and this is going to go completely sideways, but like this is huge, right? Like, as you were saying, this is absolutely massive in terms of the history of Azeroth and the world as we know it. And I kind of feel like, you know, you could end it here. This could be ended if they wanted to. And it makes me curious about, you know, would they do that? And if so, how would that play out?
Like, what if at BlizzCon they announced, by the way, guys, there is no expansion. World of Warcraft 2 is launching, and anyone who has a WoW 1.0 or World of Warcraft 1, maybe they grandfather them into the second one or something like that.
Yeah.
That would be weird. What if they do something that, like, okay, this is the end for World of Warcraft. We're going to stop creating major new content for World of Warcraft, but we're gonna spin the game forward about 100 years, and they're gonna pull like an EverQuest 2, because I think when EQ2 came out, it was continuing EverQuest, but like a lot further into the future.
Okay.
I wonder if WoW, they would ever consider doing that with WoW.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, because I kind of feel like just from a storytelling perspective, like this is so hugely epic and I don't know what's going to happen on Argus and I don't know how everything's supposed to wrap up and end. But because it's been so huge, I get scared
Illidan kills Dumbledore, by the way.
Yes, that's exactly it. But like, how do you follow that up? It's like, you know, you're at some bloody show lineup thingy and you have to go on after like the most amazing performer in the world. And, you know, what do you do? What's bigger than that? Does it have to be bigger than that? Are people going to be happier if it's not as big or bigger than that? Like,
Setting so high and you wonder how do they go better than this? How do you top Argus? And I mean, eventually we're going to find out, but that's a great question right now. I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm really excited to find out what the answer is.
I'm very excited for BlizzCon.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm really excited about BlizzCon now. Yeah.
Well, I think that's good enough as far as talking about, you know, how we're dodging spoilers and some grand stuff. I did want to talk about another topic, which is kind of a continuation from our last episode where I was talking with Thorne about raiding. And one thing I know about Cinder, and one thing I admire so much about Cinder, is she's one of the few podcasters I know who is actually involved in Mythic raid progression content. And Cinder, you were telling me earlier that your guild is actually 5 out of 9 in Mythic Tumas Argaris.
Yeah, we've had a
that's great.
Yeah, it's very exciting and a lot further than what we thought we'd get to. It's funny because Thist was on Reigns of Azeroth, I think on my second last show, and we were talking about it because Tomb had only very recently opened, and she was saying, or she'd asked, you know, do you feel like it's a bit easy almost? And at the time I was like, well, in some ways it kind of feels like, yeah, it's a little bit easy, but maybe that's because, you know, we've got stronger teams and we all work better together. And then Mythic happened and I went, it's not easy. some of the fights are really good levels to wean your way into it. And then some of the other fights, you just go, oh my God, why do I do this again? Do I hate myself? What is this? Some of them are really hard and we're not even at the hard ones yet. So, but I am excited about them.
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind because in my team, Furt's a relatively casual group. And we've had experiences like that too, where, you know, we took down a couple bosses that seemed, you know, relatively easy. Heck, there are a couple bosses later on that we one-shot. But then there's certain encounters like Demonic Inquisition where we would go up against and like, why are we wiping this much? These mechanics aren't that hard. What the heck is going on?
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting seeing that even in Mythic, you can have that kind of disparity there where some encounters are like, oh yeah, no problem, no sweat. Then you go to that very next boss and oh my gosh, hi Brick Wall, how are you?
Yeah. And that's what Mistress Sassy Pants is for a lot of guilds actually.
I like that name.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know how to say her name properly, and it sounds like sassy, so she can be Sassy Pants, even though she's a Naga with, like, no pants. But anyway.
How does a Naga wear pants? I almost want to see that diagram. I mean, you see that diagram of how would a dog wear pants?
Yes,
how would a Naga wear pants?
It's actually one of the reasons why I don't think the Naga will ever be a playable race, because they couldn't wear any of the armor that's ever been created, so.
Oh, I'm sure if Naga were a playable race, I'm sure they would let them do the whole, you know, mermaid thing and change from like a tail to a humanoid form. They'd do something like that.
You're a clever sort. Yes, that would work. Okay, see, now they need Naga as a playable race. There's your answer, Blizzard. Yep. Come on, let's see it.
And it could be a neutral race. There's no reason why Alliance or Horde have to take full ownership of them.
Yep.
I'm totally fine with them being neutral.
I'm all for that.
But going on to talking about Mythic now, the Mythic race, of course, for Tomb of Sargeras was one of the longest ones in the history of World of Warcraft raiding, and it actually took 40 some odd days for Method to downkill Jaden. And that was only after a number of nerfs had happened to kill Jaden and a couple other encounters. And I mean, these high-end bleeding edge progression guilds were running into all sorts of trouble with damage numbers that were absurd when it comes to like the raid damage that they were taking and stuff, and compositions where you had to basically, if you weren't a class that had great defensive cooldowns, you weren't going to survive in Mythic. One of the raiders, I think the leader from Exorcist, the Russian guild that got the second kill on Kill Jaden, Cinder had brought up to me that he had made a post just talking about Tomb of Sargeras and what they ran into and what they think went right, what they think went wrong, mostly what went wrong, some raiding myth busting and stuff. And if you do a search on Google for like Exorcist Tomb of Sargeras raiding post, you'll probably find it. But going through this post, there was actually one section of it that I thought was interesting, and that is his thoughts on current Mythic rating issues and WoW issues in general. And this is just his opinion and some ideas that he would like to make to change how rating is handled in World of Warcraft, and more specifically, I would say in Legion, because some of this deals with Legion-specific stuff. So, Cinder, I'm going to tackle each of these one topic at a time, and I want to get your thoughts on what you think about Mythic rating and the state of Warcraft, and we'll kind of go from there. So his first thoughts are on the whole raid lockout system, and he writes, making you only eligible for loot once per week on all difficulties can solve a lot of issues. Yeah, it won't save you from heroic week split runs, but at least we will not be forced to do another wave of split runs next week and the third week if needed, which forces developers to tune encounters harder. It will solve one more issue. Currently, you're sort of forced to continue the clear heroic raids, even if you're done with progression, since it can still provide you with a better loot than Mythic, which is a terrible design, to be honest. Now, did your team do any kind of split run stuff? I know that the real hardcore Mythic teams do split runs, which is like they split their group and they run half of their best raiders in heroic in one raid, and then half of the rest in another, and then alts to kind of just keep the loot tables fresh and flowing. Did your group do anything like that?
No, we're not at that level. I mean, this is the thing, right? And this is why I don't envy Blizzard's job at all, mm-hmm. and why anytime something happens that makes me a bit cross, I have to go, well, you know what, Cinder? You're not the only person playing this game, are you? So the thing is that you've got these high-end, top-level raiding guilds that are doing these split runs, and, you know, there's, I don't know how many people are going to be doing it, you know, however many in the world are. And so they run that way. For us, we just do heroic first and then go into Mythic, like whatever time's left over, we do for Mythic progression until there's a point where, we will do like an extra night in the week just to do our heroic runs. And then just focus on only doing Mythic. And then you've got people after that who are just doing whatever they can get through, and then you've got LFR after that, and everybody is doing whatever works best for them and their team. And it's such a big difference if you look at what's being done at the top end Mythic raiding guilds for world firsts or, you know, top 10. And then you've got the people that are doing LFR or organized raiding in normals and whatnot. It's massively different. I kind of take it from the perspective of, almost, and I don't say this lightly or to be rude, but almost ignoring what the top end guys want and looking at what the bulk of the player base might benefit best from. And having the lockout system where you're only eligible for loot once per week would be really sad for people who have been working for a really long time, decide to extend their lockout to get Kill Jaden down, say, on normal. And you're so pumped from that. You're like, right, let's go into heroic. And then, oh, no, wait, can't do that.
Well, not only that, but if they were to take this to the extreme, if they took this kind of change to the extreme and said, you know, loot once per week on all difficulties, are you trying to tell me that then people who do Raid Finder content wouldn't be able to get loot on normal. Words I have to say to that. Hell no.
No. So from that perspective, I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't like that. Going back to focusing on what the top end guys do, I understand that why they do that and why they have to do that, to get those kills. And I think that this doesn't address the issues that they're having. I think things like, our artifact weapons and the way that the legendary system is working, and to a degree, the, warforging and titan forging, they're all things that have made a bigger impact on that level of raiding than I think we probably thought it would have. And so maybe if some of those issues were addressed, the split runs might not be so much of a requirement, maybe. I don't agree with it. But that's just me at the level that I do. I don't do split runs. I couldn't imagine trying to do split runs. I can barely keep my alts doing anything right now in how fast all this content is coming out. I can't keep up. So I really do feel bad for them. But yeah.
It's interesting because in this Reddit post, of course, there are five things that the raid leader here touches on. Three of them deal with essentially gear. For the first one we just talked about was the lockout system and trying to, you know, loot once per week. The second point that he goes on to talk about is Warforged and Titanforged. He says the system's terrible, the eye level bonus should be capped, farming Emerald Nightmare for getting a best in slot Titanforged trinket for T21 progression. Such things shouldn't exist. Heroic difficulty items should never be higher than mythic items, so on and so forth. And then I'm just going to go right into the third point, because I feel that all this, the fact that the first three points he talks about are tied about gear is important to bring up. He also says that legendary upgrade system is dumb. He has no idea why the system exists at all. Why should I feel punished for having all the legendaries for all the specs and then have to farm rated arena and rated battlegrounds to maximize the quantity of legendaries that he can upgrade? Why can't we get a free upgrade when the patch is live without the additional grind system? So here's my thoughts on just all of it. With the lockout system, Warforged, Titanforged, legendary upgrades, I can knock all of this out with one solution. And it is something that I have brought up on this podcast before. And it's quite simply this. Mythic world first raiding should not have to depend on gear item level whatsoever. The whole thing about the world first race, in my opinion, Cinder, is that it should more so be a test of skill. It should be a test of how good are your DPS on their rotations, how good are your healers with mana management, how good are your tanks with mitigation and stuff like that. It should be all about skill doing that stuff, and who cares about the gear? I feel like gear for the Mythic World First race should be standardized. I'm not saying that item level shouldn't matter for mythic progression. I actually think that if you're doing it, there is something to be said about, like, you know, getting loot drops and then your item level gets higher, and then that allows you to, over time, allow you to take down those final bosses. But for this very small slice of the pie here, we're talking about 0.1% of raiders that raid this hardcore. Don't make it be about the item level. Put them all on an equal playing field and let them have just, I would say, if you had mythic mode available for a month where the item level was capped for all people in mythic, like just make mythic item level capped at a fixed item level. And once the world first race was over, let's say once the first 1, 2, or 3 raiding guilds beat Kill Jaden in that item level capped mode, then take off that item level cap and let people use however high item level gear they want to get through progression there. It just, to me, that feels like the only solution, because the Mythic World First race does not usually last too long. And once it's over, does anyone really care who's 10th place or 20th place or 100th place? For the most part, no. People just care about beating Mythic. So, I don't know. What do you think about that? I think that if you eliminate the item level thing from the whole situation. Not only are you saving these mythic guilds from having to grind and grind and grind gear and multiple split runs and stuff like that, it saves them a whole bunch of time. It allows them to focus on the actual difficulty behind these encounters. And not only that, if every raid group trying this mythic progression is at a fixed item level cap, then you can really, you can tune the encounters for a specific eye level, for a specific set of gear and stuff.
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting idea, and I'm thinking, which is probably the cogs and the burning that you can hear.
I'm really interested in your thoughts specifically, because as someone who, you raid mythics, so I'm wondering how would you feel about a setup like that?
Yeah, I mean, so I both love it and I hate it, because I hate the idea of not getting super high level gear, because I'm, you know, I like the big number. It's, you know, it's exciting, and so the other side is, I play a healer, and anything that seems to, try and, equalize things for healers just turns to pants. It, like trying to do proving grounds and even the class challenges and balancing all of the different specs, even though you're trying to, make them, kind of equalized in a way like that. It doesn't always work out so well for healers. So like for proving grounds, it was super easy for some healer types, but not for others. So I'm taking it from a very selfish way right now.
No, that's understandable. There are certain counters that really want those strong tank heals, and there are others where just group AoE healing is more sought after.
Yeah. But at the same time, I love those things because they, as much as they drive me up the wall, oh my god, the sense of accomplishment that I get when I do actually beat it is amazing. When I got proving, like I got Endless Prover on, Endless Healer on the Proving Grounds back in whenever it was, MOP or whatever, I cried because, like, I worked really hard for that, but it was freaking hard. Like, it made me have to use my toolkit in a very specific way, and I had to learn how to do it based on my abilities. It didn't matter what gear I had. It mattered how I was using my abilities. And I think that's what you're alluding to here is trying to do that same kind of thing with a whole raid group against a boss. And I imagine
it's a raid proving grounds, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. And it would be, I think it would be easier to balance the fight itself, if you're catering to just one level of stuff. Whether or not people would find that satisfying, I don't know. I don't know. I think that I would. I know other people that I, raid with would absolutely hate that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just saying I want to make it clear. I'm not saying that mythic content would always be item level capped. I'm just saying for the duration of the race, for the first part of the race, and then once the first part of the race is over, then, you know, you can have the item level cap be a toggleable thing, kind of like the Old War fighting Algolon achievement at a certain eye level or below. You could take the item level cap off and just do mythic the way you want. Or if you want the extra challenge for maybe an achievement or whatever like that, you could talk to some NPC and turn the item level cap on. Something like that.
Yeah, I think in some ways people might feel that they're being punished for having good gear. Like I'm not one of those people, right? I'm all for trying new things in this game because I freaking love it. It's awesome. So I'm all for that, but I can see that, like, the flip side of people who are a bit more not peachy keen for things like that. They would go, well, why am I being punished for having got a really cool Titanforged proc on a piece of gear? You're going to nerf that down because other people didn't get that. I think back to the days where we didn't have Warforging and Titanforging and the legendaries weren't RNG based, and you didn't have the thing with the Warforging and the Titanforging is that it means that you have this greater pool of options of gear that may actually end up being used in a raid. And so you might get something from a world boss that procced so hard on a Titanforge that you're going to keep using it. That, you know, Blizz might not have been expecting that. And so didn't tune around the proc that particular trinket might give you. I was using a Drape of Shame cloak from Karazhan that was like a tragically low eye level of like, I think it was like 860 or something through most of Mythic Nighthold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because of the proc on it was so much better than other bits that we could get in Nighthold itself. And it was only, towards the end that I'm like, I'm just really sick of having such a low eye level. I'm going to pretend that it's not as good as it is and not use it. So I think...
Well, you also bring up a good point that I just thought of, is even if they had that whole item level cap, with legendaries... Even if you item level capped legendaries, let's be clear, certain legendaries are far better than others. For example, which would you rather have? Kill Jaden's, if you're a DPS, kill Jaden's Burning Wish, a trinket with an on-use thing that lets you do a whole bunch of burst AoE, or, if you're a warlock specifically, a pair of pants that lets you open two demonic gateways. that's a tough choice. Yeah. I wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, that's because there's some... So we run... we did. We have a bunch of healers, and when we do our heroic runs, and even to a degree some of the more farm mythic ones now, we don't need that many healers. So I would like to be able to turn around and play elemental, because that's my DPS spec. But I don't have the right legendaries to do that. So even though my eye level and the other bits of gear are great, I don't have any throughput legendaries that are going to help with that. So if I was like in that situation where my level's being capped and then the legendaries that I've got aren't so great, you're going to feel even more punished, I think, than having crummy legendaries. So, I mean, there's definitely pros and cons, but in some ways, I feel like taking out the RNG of the legendaries that you can get would help. I really like that.
Maybe you just have to probably, if you were to do a system like the one I proposed, I almost feel like you would have to disable the legendary procs itself, so that the legendary equipment would just essentially be a gear slot. It wouldn't do anything special. So, in other words, you'd basically take the legendary out of the legendary. Yeah. I think it'd be the only way. It'd be the only way you could do it in like the system I propose. But
But I mean, as you said, it's only for a couple of weeks. But right. I think there's a mentality in some groups that they're a bit more. They feel a bit more cutting edge than what they may be. And I don't say that to be a cow or anything, because it's great that you feel powerful and you're going in and doing this awesome stuff. But what that tends to do, like when you start killing mythic bosses, and not at a massively high level, but you're doing it, you feel like when things get brought in that are generally dealing with something that's happened at that, you know, top 10 team level, you tend to take that personally, and it's kind of like, well, actually, it's not really going to affect you. But some people can't really see that sometimes. So, it's a really, like I said at the top of this, it's really hard for Blizzard, and I don't envy them at all. I love when, especially on my alts, because they have no gear, I do love when I get a piece of gear and it Warforges or Titanforges. The first time that we killed Heroic Kill Jaden, there's a healer trinket that drops off there, and it Titanforged for me. And so in the first week of Tomb, I had a 940 eye level trinket that I could use.
Oh my
goodness. I know. Like, that's, my healing
that
lead was
sexy,
like,
hearing.
Yeah, it was just amazing. Like, yes, I really liked it. So, you know, I really love it when that happens, but it comes at a cost. There are downsides to having that system in place. And so, I mean, I'm sure that they're doing so much looking into how this plays out and what impact it has. I guess in some ways, maybe part of the trouble is that moving into this Warforged and Titanforged system and having the RNG situation with the legendaries is bringing some of the problems that the top 10 raiding teams would have further down the line to people, even at my level, that are just, you know, doing whatever they can in Mythics. So more people are feeling the issues.
Right. And there's, I mean, also when it comes to trying to think of solutions for these top-end raiding guilds, as the development team for WoW, just how far can you go to make the experience better for them without upsetting the vast remaining player base?
Yep. Yes, because, I mean, like, again, the flip side of the Warforging and the Titanforging is that you've got somebody who's just heard about WoW or just has finally decided to, you know, come to the dark side and join in. And, you know, if you're just starting now, you're going to feel really icky not having great level gear to do stuff with your friends. So I can see why the Warforging and the Titanforging really helps with that. But everything comes at a cost, and it's determining whether or not that cost is actually worth it. Is it worth it? Are they getting enough people coming into the game to make this Warforging a great system versus the number of people who are leaving because they're just really fed up with how things are playing out and they just can't do it anymore?
Some people that might be fed up would be people that play classes for mains that maybe don't have the best damage mitigation abilities in the world. And moving on, I mean, we've talked a lot about gear, but it's not necessarily just about gear when it's talking about Mythic Woes here. One of the next points that Exorcist makes here is that encounters are being tuned for classes that have abilities that grant, you know, full or partial immunity. Lately, a lot of abilities are being tuned for different immunes, damage reductions, similar mechanics, which limit the classes that these top rating guilds can bring to encounters. Example that's given is Mythic Kil'jaeden has two tanking Armageddon zones. However, one of your tanks always has Fel Claws, which increases your damage, so you're forced to soak 30 million physical damage.
It doesn't tickle my mind.
So you have to soak 30 million damage with someone who can immune it, which is basically a hunter, a mage, or a paladin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my warlock cannot help soak 30 million damage. No. I'm sorry. I mean, I've got some damage mitigation, but I can't. I got nothing there. No. Other examples, Dark Mark, Armageddon, Focused Red Flame, Burning Sphere, Touch of Sargeras, Unstable Soul, Rain of Brimstone. So there's a whole bunch of abilities. And actually, I had mentioned in a tweet that I was calling Tomb of Sargeras Tomb of Soakgeras, because there are a lot of abilities like Hydra Shot on Mistress Sassy Pants, as you call her.
Yep.
Where if you don't have enough people lining up on that line, people going to die.
You are done. Yep. Yeah.
So how do you feel now playing a healer for your mythic progression? I can imagine that it's probably frustrating for you when your raid group may have classes that don't have those little tricks for immunities and stuff like that. Mm. How is your raid comp? I mean, are you guys finding that the whole immunity thing is important for your progression?
Yeah, it is really tough. And one of the things that I don't like as a healer is that I don't like abilities that are, you live or you don't. I want that in between. I want to have something to heal because, healing, like, there's nothing to heal if somebody immunes it. Most of the time they're staying at full health or close to. And if they don't do it, then they die. So it doesn't give you that in between to actually heal anything, which is a little bit sad. Mythic Desolate Host, there's a spear ability that goes out that hurts a lot. And on Mythic, it hurts even more to the point where it will one-shot you unless you have something to mitigate that. And I'm talking something pretty serious. So for hunters, they need to use their turtle to survive it. But if they get two in a row, they can't do two in a row, and you need somebody else to use an immunity or, you know, get people through it or whatever. And it makes it incredibly difficult. And even then, the number of times that we've just gone, we are so sick of hunters getting abilities on them because they're real pain in the bottom to try and heal up. it's tricky. It can be really, really tricky. I'm all for soaking abilities, but yeah, I don't like that, you know, dead or alive mentality. I want people to take some damage. I don't know. And there's a lot.
Right. And I mean, one solution that could be proposed is, well, give every class some sort of form of immunity ability. Mm. However, if you do that, then you are going on that slippery slope of homogenizing classes.
Yep. Everyone's
and killing class identity, and trying to establish class identity was a big important part of Legion, because people don't want to feel... It's funny how the pendulum has swung with that. I mean, I remember when, in the earlier days of raiding, it was definitely about, you know, you have to bring the class, not the player. Then people complained about that. So through Lich King and Cataclysm and a bit into Mists of Pandaria, they tried to design things more where it was more about bring the player, not the class. Now that we've gone back toward, you know, making sure that class identity is important as well as class fantasy, but talking about class identity here, it's feeling more and more like, well, bring the class, not the player. So it's just this pendulum that swings back and forth, and I wonder if this will continue into the next expansion. I wonder if the dev team will be like, okay, well, we need to give everyone immunity or give no one immunity.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched Method's mythical Jaden kill, but I would just sitting in there and I'm giggling at like all of those rogues, and I just like the way that they had to stack their comp to get through it. You know, you can kind of laugh at, but at the same time you kind of go, I feel, for me, I'm a shaman, right? I'm a fluffy panda shaman, and that's who I am a little bit as a person as well. And I would be really sad if I couldn't play my shaman because that wasn't the right spec to bring to a particular fight. So I kind of feel bad that those guys don't get to have that, because they're just swapping between, okay, well, we're going to need this particular class for this fight, so go level up one of them. So yeah, I do hope that like, I'm okay with there being abilities in fights that do require immunities and stuff. That's absolutely fine. But it's just a little bit on overdrive in Tomb. It's too much.
In other words, they just need to dial it back one or two notches. Yeah. They don't need to dial it back from 11 down to zero.
Exactly. Yes. Don't go completely the other way. We want something to heal. Give us something to do.
Finding that happy medium seems hard. To be a tricky thing. When changes are made with WoW in particular, it's something that's brought up a lot. It's that when the player base says X is bad, Blizzard's like, okay, let's go completely the opposite way.
Yeah.
And then people are like, no, this is bad. So then they swing the other way. Just find that medium.
Somewhere in between.
Instead of zero, instead of dialing it to 11, let's dial it to 5.5.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'd even be happy with 8. You know, I'd be okay with an 8.
All right. The last point here, and to wrap things up, the last point that was brought up by Exorcist in this Reddit post is they feel that implementing balance changes in 0.5 patches right before a new raid tier causes difficulties. They say it's an awful decision, and it's not only a hardcore player's issue, it's mentions in the post. Let's imagine I'm a casual player enjoying my class, looking forward playing it in a new raid. I know that I'm well aware of how to play my class, which legendaries, rotation, and everything else I need to use, and suddenly 2 to 3 weeks before a new raid, my class has changed. What if I'm not a fan of them? There's no time to reroll for some people, not enough time to adapt to all the changes. For the top guilds, it's not an issue. However, because of that, developers are getting new balance and tuning info too late, meaning some classes are staying too good for progression, such as Arms Warriors, while other classes are just benched, like Ret Paladins, Frost DK, etc. Cinder, this is a weird one for me, because normally I would say, you know what, Exorcist, I getcha, you kind of have a point. There's just one small problem with this particular patch. In 7.25, Destruction Warlocks went from being, okay, to Destruction Warlocks are freaking amazing in this newest patch. I mean, I was doing, in just my raid group, I was kind of doing middle of the team DPS. This patch hit, and it's not like my gear changed all that drastically, but the very first raid after the patch hit, I was number one, number two DPS. Actually, I was number two for sure. I know because Arsalan in our group does godly DPS. My DPS is a Destruction Warlock improved, and I didn't change a whole lot to my rotation. To me, I just did what I normally did, and things were great. Things were better. Now, obviously, I'm the exception to the rule. My spec, my class got much better to play, and I'm happy with that. I understand that for some classes and some specs, the changes right before a raid launch wasn't necessarily the best decision in the world. Did it affect you as a healer?
It's like resto shamans don't really exist. Nothing really changed for us going into Legion at all. We got some things taken away, but, you know, in terms of gameplay, nothing changed. I didn't have to relearn anything. And there's some patch notes that go out, and I'm like, resto shamans, we don't exist. So, you know, in that way, I'm not really affected. In another way, I'm kind of like, I wish I was affected because here's some things that I'd like. But, you know, it is what it is, and I don't...
My alt's a resto shaman, but I don't play her a whole lot. But I'm wondering, if, as someone who plays a resto shaman pretty regularly, do you feel that resto shamans are just in a bad place right now, or they're just kind of middle of the road and not really getting any attention for good or bad?
You know, the actual issue with, like, healer class balancing, it's hard anyway, because a lot of it really has to do with the team makeup and the other healers that you're healing with and how many healers you're healing with. Like, with DPS, it doesn't really matter how many DPS you bring or what kinds you bring. You can still bring your own game, regardless. With healers, healer comps, it's really difficult. So, and I play with some really amazing strong healers, and I'm not the greatest healer in the world. I'm never going to say that. But there's some times where I come out of it going, oh my God, I suck. But then I'm like, okay, yes. But in that particular fight, you had heaps of healers in there, and you didn't have a situation where people were stacked up to stand in your healing rain. And so you weren't going to do as well as you could have for that anyway. Like, everything was against you. Cut yourself some slack. I talk to myself a lot, clearly. So yeah, it's hard.
I can only imagine the hell of the Fallen Avatar fight as a resto shaman. Because everyone, I mean, for phase one, everyone's all spread out for that fight. So healing rain, chain heals, not too much.
We'll see. I do chain heal because I run the high tide talent, and that helps you.
Okay.
You know, I love chain heal. Like, I think even if it's not the strongest thing to do, it just looks so pretty that I just do it anyway. In that sense, there's always things that could be done, but there's some situations where I will wipe the floor with people because all the stars aligned and it all worked perfectly. And so, you know, it's very hard for them to do. And so I just take what comes with that. But for everybody else, I guess, a love-hate relationship with this. Like, there's some situations where, like, you, the changes come in and it's been amazing, and so you feel really good about it. Other times they come in and they're crap and you feel really bad. And part of me was like, I just kind of wish that they wouldn't touch classes for an expansion, which I don't think is possible. But, you know, that's an ideal world.
No, it's not. Mm. Yeah. There are so many things that I wish the devs could do or not do, but just in a game where player progression, power progression, item level progression, where progression is such a key thing as it is in an MMO, numbers are going to get bigger and bigger and change, and you're changing this dial and that dial, and these stats change and that stat changes, and things are going to get out of balance over time. If the game were to stay at a constant with all of its numbers and rules, it wouldn't be as exciting. Control.
It wouldn't be
exciting, and people would be angry about it, and people would feel like they were just stuck in a rut. It is no easy task to design raid encounters, even if you talk just Mythic. Because there is a wide spectrum of players that participate in Mythic. You have your Methods and Exorcists, and then you have people like your Raiding Guild, who's, you know, Mythic progression's still a big deal, but at the same time, you guys aren't trying to get World First, and nope. I feel like the rules and the expectations for your guild when it comes to Mythic Raiding are far different than the rules and expectations for those high-end guilds. Mm. So even within Mythic Raiding, the dev team has a monumental task ahead of them when it comes to trying to figure out, okay, how do we make the most, the largest portion of the player base happy? Yeah. And sacrifices are going to be made, and not everyone's going to be happy. That's just how it is.
Yeah, and I mean, like, on the flip side, even though the top-end raiding guilds are a very small portion, they're also a very visible portion. So, you know, if they do get upset about it and they crack, that's going to have a very detrimental effect as well and could cost, like, it would be the equivalent of losing, you know, X number of new players coming in because, you know,
do you get what I mean? They're like, representing the game.
Exactly. Right? They're just from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So you want to keep them happy at the same time because they're the ones who are making these big Reddit posts that thousands of people are viewing.
Yeah, I just want to give Blizzard cookies because, you know, it's a hard job and I'm always so grateful for what they do. And I mean, that's the difference and it's always the key thing. And I always say this so many times in whenever talking on podcasts or writing in my blog and shit, I'm just always like, you know, it's a hard job and the best that you can do is just go, okay, this might not be great for me right now, but you know what? It's going to be great for somebody else. And there's other people playing. So, you know, bear that in mind. If something bad comes along for you, it's not Blizzard sitting there going, right, that's Cinder. She's been having it too good for too long now and we're going to put her in her place. Stuff this chick. They're not doing that. So, you know, I don't know. The last thing that I just wanted to say just about the balance changes and stuff, I get that it's difficult doing it before a new raid tier, but I would argue when would you rather they did it? Because mathing it out, it's 11 weeks between patches. It's been 11 weeks between 7.1 to 7.15 and so on and so forth, which brings us, by the way, to an end of month anticipated release for 7.3, which just scares the crap out of me.
I have seen the rumors and the conspiracy theory about the 77 days. I've seen them YouTube videos. I know who you are out there. I watch your content, but I'm going to say this. I'm going to make the bold claim now before we end this episode. Patch 7.3 will not, I repeat, not drop on August 29th. It will not drop on, what is it, September 5th? Because September 5th is the day after Labor Day. I am calling my shot and I'm saying September 12th is the launch day for patch 7.3. You can go ahead and schedule a vacation day off from work right now. And hey, if I'm wrong, you can send your emails to rollingrestartpodcast@gmail.com. Cinder, it's been a hell of an hour. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Sorry for rambling.
No. It's your rambling was perfect, and I'm glad you put up with us re-recording the first 15 minutes of the show.
Didn't even notice.
Good practice.
Yeah.
For those now, of course, you're not doing Reigns of Azeroth right now, but if people want to perhaps chat with you on social media and give you their thoughts and opinions about raiding or mounts or pets or otherwise, how can they reach you?
So on Twitter, I'm @Cinder_tweets, and I also blog not as often as I would like to, but you can check that out at cindersays.net. And yeah, have a chat, but I'm not an expert at all. I just push buttons and hope that people survive.
Well, as someone who is in normal progression for Tomb of Sargeras, looking up to you and your 5 out of 9 mythic progression, I salute you. I think you're of a hell of a raider.
Thank you.
Folks, you can reach me on Twitter at Rowow. That's R-H-O-W-O-W. You'll get all the information for how to contact the show and find it near the end. Of course, as always, Rolling Restart is supported by people like possibly you. If you go to patreon.com/realmpodcast, that's a Patreon page for Realm Maintenance. Any Patreon support for that show also helps the show as well, because, hey, guess what? I'm using the same equipment for both shows. And by the way, I do want to thank those who have supported both shows on Patreon, because part of the money used for purchasing a new microphone was thanks to those guys. So thank you very much. It's been a great hell of a ride, Cinder. I am looking forward to talking to you again. I'm sure you and I will be talking again about World of Warcraft at some point in the future. Whether you are a regular on a podcast or not, it is always a pleasure talking with you, and I love your perspective.
Thank you very much. I love chatting with you too.
All right. Well, folks, that does it for this week. You can catch us in 2 weeks, where we will return to the top of the rotation. And I believe that means we'll have Belle on to talk about things and stuff. Wouldn't be surprised if it's PvP related, but hey, maybe not. You'll just have to wait and see. So until next time, folks, I've been Ro, she's been Cinder, and we now return you to your regularly scheduled adventures in Azeroth. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
It's the end of the show, and that means it's once again time for your weekly podcast roundup, brought to you by the Realm Maintenance Podcast. The following is an insanely quick rundown of every podcast covering a Blizzard franchise that I'm aware of that produced a show between July 31st and August 6th of 2017. For General Blizzard Podcast, we have All Things Azeroth, Blizzard Watch, Blue Recluse, Battle.net News, Epic Fail, Frozen Nerds, Game Case Show, Geeks of Azeroth, Group Quest, Hearthcast, The Instant Slagging Balls of Sundering, The Training Dummies, and Twist and Error Blogcast. Your World of Warcraft shows are Adventures in Azeroth, Azeroth Coast to Coast, Azeroth Roundtable, Final Boss for Azeroth, Frazzlecast, Girls Gone Wild, Hunting Party Podcast, Lion's Pride Tavern, The Lorecraft Podcast, Middlefinger Podcast, Pwncast, Raid and Walicia, Reigns of Azeroth, The Starting Zone, The Summoning Stone, The Torn and the Goblin, World of Warcast, WoW Challenges, and WoWhead Weekly. Inside the Tavern for Hearthstone, we have 16 Dusty, Eager Chicken, Round the Hearth, Brewmasters, Coin Concede, Fireside Talks, Golden Wisp, Hearthaholics, Hearth Coach, Hearthcore, Hero Powercast, The Light Forge, Legend of the Innkeeper, Off Curve, The Salty Dog, Tier 5 Podcast, Top Deck Kings, Walk to Work, and Well Met. Heroes of the Storm podcasts include Core, Gankbush Squad, Heroes Forge, Heroes of the Storm Power Hour, Into the Nexus, Lords of the Storm, The Nexus Trolls, and Troll HGC. And finally, for Overwatch, we have the Cavalry, Heroes Never Die, Junkertown FM, Omnic Lab, The Overcast, Overplayed, Overtime, Overwatchers, Theory Watch, and Watchpoint. You can find the weekly podcast roundup at the end of this show and every episode of the Realm Maintenance Podcast. For links to all of these podcasts and more of your favorite Blizzard franchise shows, go to realm-maintenance.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, or your podcast app of choice. You can follow the show on Twitter at RestartCast. Email the show at RollingRestartPodcast@gmail.com. The Rolling Restart is a presentation of Realm Maintenance Productions. You can find archives of this show at RollingRestart.FrozenFoxMedia.com. The music for the show is Shaping of the World, originally by Jason Hayes from Blizzard Entertainment, and remixed by Pascal Michael Stifel. No copyright infringement is intended. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.